This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well. This is Mark Linsenmeyer, your guide to philosophy today.
And this is Bill Arnett, a philosophical line cook, yet an improv executive chef.
See, that's good.
And we have a guest. We have a guest today.
Yes, we have dual guides. So they might pull in different directions. They might pull this way and that way. And he has improv experience. Colby, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Colby Granville. I'm the editor-in-chief and founder of After Dinner Conversation, a monthly short story literary magazine. But the reason I'm on your podcast is because its focus is ethical and philosophical questions. So we only publish short stories that are somehow tied to, you know, what would a good person do sort of something.
Okay.
So you don't think that just applies to any short story if you read it deeply enough?
Well, that's actually a great point. So, you know, I used to use the example of Harry Potter of like, it's just reading. And then Harry Potter people got after me and they're like, well, what about that? It's about friendship. It's about, and I totally get it. It's a spectrum. I get that it's a spectrum. What I would say is when you finish the book, this is my litmus test. When you finish whatever you're reading, ask yourself, is it a story with a sort of moral point, or is it a moral point told in a story, right? And so if you look at something like Game of Thrones, I'm sure you could dig up some values and some discussion points in that. I'm sure you could. But now look at something like Huck Finn, right? Where the story is the tool for the thing that Mark Twain wanted to talk about.
Sure.
You know, whether it's The Great Gatsby, right? Like, you don't read The Great Gatsby because you care about bootlegging. You read The Great Gatsby because you care about love and loss and all of these things and what it means to be human. And they needed a tool to tell that story.
All right.
Well, I'm guessing when these authors write and submit their stories, they read it over. They don't just spit it to a page and then just send it off and say, I hope that was philosophical enough, or do you have frequent submitters that...
So you've exactly immediately come up with the problem that we had in the beginning, and that was explaining to people what we do, because there is no other thing that does what we do. We initially were like, we're open to all genres, but we want philosophical and ethical questions. And so people would just be like, well, you take horror, you take fantasy, science fiction, romance. And it's like, yes, but only in this small niche. And so when we first started, I sent everything back when I realized that people thought all genres meant all genres and said, look, you got to watch this video. And so I made about a 6-minute video explaining what we do. And I'll tell you, the first problem that we had was the difference between a hard problem and an ethical problem. And I'll give you the example that I used in the video because it framed it really well for me. So let's say that you've got a sick dog, you take it to the vet, and the vet says, look, your dog's in pain. It's just going to be continually in pain for the next 6 or 8 weeks, and it's going to die. You should probably put the dog down as a humane thing. Now, you can certainly argue what a person will do, right? Some people just won't do it. They won't have the heart for it. But you would never argue what a good person should do, right? And so that's a hard problem, but it's not an ethical problem. As opposed to, let me give you the counterpoint. So let's say you take your cat into the vet, and the guy says, I can fix your cat for $2,500, and it's going to live 2-3 more years. But let me show you the pound next door where we put down 35 cats a day. And for $2,500, you could give all of those cats an additional 6 weeks of life and a chance to get adopted. Now, that's not a hard problem. I mean, it is a hard problem, but it's very much an ethical problem, right? Of like, does my cat have more value to me than the 500 cats that are going to get euthanized?
Yes. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And if you'd met my cat, you would agree. I love my cat.
Exactly. And this is why we don't like bombing people who speak English, because like, this is why you would save a family member and let 10 strangers die, right? This is why you push the person on the tracks to stop the trolley. Mm-hmm. But that's like sort of the easiest layman's difference of how I can explain between a hard problem and an ethical problem. We're looking for stories where two reasonable people could reasonably debate what a person should do. And they both might have very valid perspectives based on their value systems.
Okay. All right.
That's my elevator pitch.
Okay. Well, I will reevaluate my submission and see if it meets the criteria.
The one you might know is there's a short story called The Ones Who Walked Away from Omelas. It's often taught in philosophy classes.
Okay.
About the boy in the basement, and he lives there in his filth, but the rest of the town is a utopia. And when you turn 12, you have to go see the boy. And then you can decide, like, are you willing for this bargain? Do you live in the town in utopia? Or do you just walk away from the town and be like, look, I can't be a part of this, even though only one person suffers for the benefit of many? We get a lot of utilitarian submissions because that's sort of the first sort of ethics people often think of, like that and the right to die. We too many both of those categories. But yeah, I mean, that's a great starting point for people. Or the Kurt Vonnegut story, Harrison Bergeron, where they put shackles on people to make everyone equal. There are examples of what we do, but they are very narrow moments in time. It's not really its own genre the way we do it.
I think we've got to put together submission right now.
I would love it.
Without communicating. Bill, do you want to sort of be the brainchild of this one, or should I try to do one first, and then you do the second one? How do you want to do this?
You know, it's a tricky one, Mark. I think you might be able to come up with something from an ethical dilemma more easily than I could. And perhaps I could craft the story around it. Look at this team, Mark. Look at what we can do.
Okay. All right. So let's do an improv scene here. So, Colby, you have experience, you said, in the improv world.
And speed. as a producer, yes. So I've watched a lot of improv in my day.
Okay.
I've only done some, but I've watched a lot of it.
May I ask where? Is it?
So actually, at Arizona State University, there's a sketch comedy group that's now 35 years old. It's the oldest sketch comedy group at the university level in America, and probably one of the oldest outside of like Second City in America. Within the first year or two after getting started, they started a sister group called Bear in Mind Improv. And so, and this is going to blow your mind as people who know this sort of stuff. Every Thursday and Friday, an hour show. Thursday was improv, Friday was sketch. Every Friday for 35 years. So imagine trying to write, cast, block, direct, memorize lines for 45 or 50 minutes of material every week. It's the kind of insanity you could only do in college that you would never try as an adult.
Yes. And if I might roll some dice here, I'm going to presume Bear in Mind is B-A-R-R-E-N.
Exactly. Yes, of course it is. Why wouldn't it be? And they, again, both groups are terribly talented. They're still going even to this day. You know, some relatively famous people and some Emmys and a whole bunch of other people have come out of it over the years.
Sure, sure, sure. Wouldn't be surprised. I may know a few people. It's at Arizona State, Tucson. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be surprised. I think I can, some people come to mind.
David Spade, easy, quick example.
There we go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Well, that's outstanding.
All right. I think I have an idea.
Okay.
I will start this with Bill. Colby, you should jump in as a character whenever you feel comfortable doing so.
Should we do this as like a pitch meeting, Mark? You do this as a pitch? Like a Hollywood pitch meeting? Not to get too overhanded here.
You mean the people in the scene doing a pitch? Because that's not what that's not my vision. That's not my creative vision.
I should never have gone down this road. Now I feel bad for even... Well, you had one a few episodes ago, Mark, where you kind of laid it on real thick.
That's what this is going to be. We're going to lay it on real thick.
All right.
All right, Mr. Williams, this is your 1,000th time through the teleporter, and This is the time where we bring you forward and we tell you the truth about teleportation, which is every time you've gone through the teleporter, you might have just been, you know, I'm going to go down to the corner store. I don't want to walk. I don't want to walk those two blocks. I'm going to go through the teleporter.
No.
So you've been doing it quite a bit as your budget has allowed. Mm-hmm. And every time you do that, actually, the one at the source, it's sucked into the machine and it is frozen. It is still alive. A new one of you is built on the other end. So we've actually been collecting these. So now there are 1,000 Mr. Williamses squished down and lined up. But we could generate all of them, any number of them right here and now, or send them to one of the other planets or really anything. Or we could just kill them all. So you actually get to decide. It's your intellectual property. So go.
Wow.
If you want to take a second, if you want to talk through the options.
Well, I saw the prestige.
I mean, I could call up our AI ethicist if you want help with this.
You have an AI ethicist?
Yes, I have an AI ethicist. Do you want me to push the button? Or do you want to make this decision all by yourself?
I like the idea of the computer making humans' ethics decisions, but sure. Yeah, what would the AI ethicist have to say?
Let me pull it up. So this is a reproduction of a very famous individual. He was an editor of a Journal of Philosophical Fiction, Mr. Colby Granville. Long dead, thank God. But here is his recreation. You know, it's the same question everybody asks. So you're already familiar with the scenario. Mr. Williams, did you have some questions for the ethicist?
I bill hourly, by the way, in case you're wondering. I understand you're bringing me back from the dead and you're going to put me back into the dead after you ask these questions. But I've got family, you know, 4 generations deep now, but they're going to want some Bitcoin or something. I don't know what you guys use now, if it's carrots or Bitcoin or whatever, toilet paper, but they're going to want payment.
Well, we're actually a post-currency society.
Don't worry about his requirements. We wipe his memory after this. I mean, next time he's not going to. So this is the first time.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You wipe his memory? You wipe his memory after this?
It's just an AI. You know, it doesn't have to learn from its own experience. It has the whole history of humanity and all of literature to learn from.
Not to brag.
Did the other Mii's feel pain when they were sunk into the machine and frozen?
They didn't feel a thing. In fact, they don't even know that they're sunk into the machine and frozen. They're waiting for you to make a decision.
Oh.
So if you kill them all off, they never are none the wiser.
Can we keep one?
Sure, but how do you decide?
Well, the first one. Because if I have any tumors, it would be least likely to be apparent in the first one.
Okay. So just so I'm clear, though, that means that all of the information that the first you learned when you first used this teleporter 8 years ago,
yeah,
that person doesn't know that. They don't know whatever you've learned in those last 8 years.
I kept a log.
Okay.
I've written things down and kept a logbook.
I have a question, Mr. Williams. So are you just in keeping this one, what is the purpose? Are you just kind of trying to do a multiplicity thing, have him join you in your life and run errands for you, be your servant, or just be a donor? Or what do you have in mind?
Spare body parts.
Exactly. Exactly. Keep them frozen. And should anything occur to me, I've got an organ bank ready to go. You said, here's the thing. You said there was no pain involved. There was no suffering or anything. So it's not like we've thrown 999 Mii's into a flaming pit. I would feel bad about that. But the idea that they were just kind of stasised immediately, it's easier for me to swallow.
I mean, by that rationale, though, just to be clear, you're okay being the 1,000th Mii and having the 1,000th and first you make that decision related to you. That would only be fair.
Well, I wouldn't know it was happening.
Correct. So you're still willing to continue using the teleporter now, even knowing this?
That was the follow-up question was, now, that's why we don't tell people right away, because then we found that people didn't want to keep their subscription going if they knew this is what was happening. But we feel like after this point, you should be able to handle it.
How much does it cost to maintain this storage facility for all these teleported peoples?
We get them very small, so it's been included in your... But, you know, after a certain point, just like I hear Facebook at some point got rid of all the live videos, and they sent emails very regularly for about 6 months telling you they were about to get rid of all the live videos. Well, you had to decide whether you're going to deal with this or not. That's the point we've reached here, where, you know, even though it's pretty cheap for us, we're not going to bother.
I've heard that you can have them dream for a small fee.
Okay, well, that's creepy. Now I'm having second thoughts. Which one of them is my soul in? Or is that for me to decide?
I think that's up to the automatic door.
Huh?
Well, isn't that how that works? The automatic door only opens for your soul, right? So you walk up to the... If you walk into the grocery store and the door doesn't open...
Yes.
You're a ghost.
Well, doors have opened for me. Dogs like me, so I'm feeling okay.
I don't know if the dog barks at you or not.
Yeah, so I'm still the container of my essence.
I think, Mr. Granville, that particular technology was discontinued around when you died because...
The soul-detecting door?
Yeah, because so many people were being locked out of everything. It was no longer feasible. I mean, it was good for a while when AI was getting going and we were like, I don't want no droids in this place. But we kind of got over that.
That's good.
Look, am I going to use this thing again? You know, maybe some having second thoughts, you know, but then again, I've already done it 1,000 times and I don't
exactly
feel any worse for wear. I mean, have you noticed people who've done it 10,000 times? Are there your hair fall out? I mean... Not that I've got much left, but like, are there side effects?
Like copying a VHS tape over and over again?
Totally. Well, from what I've seen from the archives, yes, as I understand it.
I mean, if anything, you get improved that some of the, just for simplicity of data, some of the idiosyncrasies maybe get shaved off a little. So I'm betting that if you thought out that original you, the number one, probably be a little more interesting than you.
More interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, some of that create, it's like, you know, how people used to describe taking antidepressants, like, I'm not me anymore. Well, it's a little like that. We like to keep people docile.
You, but more chill.
Huh.
So do you want the wild you of the first pre-teleporter, Wild Bill Williams?
Well, that was more me, I guess. That's what you're saying. Idiosyncrasies and all. That was.
But it's not you, though. You are you. Are you saying you're not you?
I am me. I don't want to get caught up in a semantics thing here. I think that version of me may have been more me than me now, but I am me.
Okay, so we can just kill you and bring that one back if you would prefer. Sorry, let the ethicist weigh in on this.
Mark, I'm just curious, in the future that you're living in, can there be such a thing as a Bill Prime who then, you know, can direct all these sub-bills to go work for him and make him some money? That would seem to me... Like, you know, I mean, I don't think slavery is a thing anymore. I'm sure you guys are beyond that. But shouldn't Bill Prime have superior rights over Bill Subs?
I mean, yeah, if you want to deal with how much is in your bank account, but well, actually, I know. I mean, we have access to it. It's not enough to support all those. And they're certainly not the employment, given the welfare state that we live in. You're not going to get benefits for all of them. I think it's you'd have to
Send them off to work. Hey, go have them work at it. Go have them make you money, man. Bill Prime should be able to direct all of the other bills and take their money.
Bill Prime understands what it would be like to have a laborious job, and Bill Prime would not wish that on Bill Subprimes.
So, Bill, are you saying these are people then that have some basic level of rights?
Once you thaw them out, I mean, shouldn't Dr. Frankenstein have understood that if you make a human, you probably shouldn't keep it locked up in a castle? It's not going to be happy.
At least in the movie.
Yeah.
So I can read you some case studies if you're interested in what other people have decided.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So this Karen Wheeler here, she decided, as Mr. Granville suggested, to thaw out all of them, get them to work. She actually sent them on a colony ship to go mine a newly discovered planet, and then she just never heard from them again. So that's one of the things you could do.
Just to send them off?
It might work better for some other people, but this is the data that we have. Most people choose to just kill them, so I don't actually have that many case studies of people that did other things.
If they're frozen now, and if they have made no new memories since going through the teleport machine...
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like what you're saying, Bill, is we're the sum of our memories and not of our shell. That solves your soul problem.
Yeah. I mean... Now I feel guilty for being so cavalier about the teleporter, you know?
Nobody told you ahead of time.
I'm afraid we're running out of, you've only paid for a certain amount of Mr. Granville's time, so make a decision right now.
Kill them all! All right. Get out of my life! Get out of my life! Kill them!
And the bitter irony is, you are the Prime! You've made a decision for yourself! The end.
The end, okay. All right.
Didn't even get to cannibalism. Why not eat your past selves?
There was a lot more room for other case studies, but I didn't want to hog the mic there. Did we blow you away if we just transcribed that? Could that go in after dinner conversations?
It could not. And I'll tell you why.
You've gotten it 10 times?
Yeah. So the thing that you're describing is a classic philosophical discussion that comes up. So classic that we get it about once a month.
Sure.
God, the number of times that we get it is AI alive, right? Is it sentient? What does it mean to be sentient? The number of times we get medically assisted suicide and the ethics of assisted suicide. So what we find, so we do blind readings.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who we're reading, but when we accept someone, we ask them for their bio. And invariably, we get about 80% PhD professors.
Okay.
And about 20% writers. So I'll get a bio and I'll be like, hey, thanks for this great story about AI ethics. Send me your bio. And they're like, I went to Cambridge and got a PhD in AI ethics. I now am a visiting fellow at Columbia with TY Teach AI ethics.
Yeah.
Or I actually work in a department that focuses on experimental philosophy or economics or physics. Or because here's the thing that we struggle with. If you're just sitting down for the first time trying to think of something clever, somebody else has already thought of it. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're a writer looking to submit, you have to look for the small moments of ethics. I'll give you an example of one that I literally witnessed yesterday. We haven't gotten into the submission. I was driving through Sedona, which was, you know, a little hippie area north of where I live in Arizona. And there was a woman arguing with her husband on the street as I was parking. And so I like listened to their conversation. And she was like, but these help. They help me stay focused and they help me stay centered and they help balance me. To which his response is, they're effing crystals. And she's like, but didn't we agree that our healthcare is a shared expense? And he's like, yes, it is. But your healthcare is not real. And so if you're a writer, that's a really interesting small moment of what are your obligations to your spouse to take care of them in a way that you believe has no value, right? That you don't have to be a philosophy professor to think of that. You just have to be a person paying attention to the world around you.
Well, I think that's the ding on philosophy professors, isn't it?
Yeah, could be.
And anyone in academia. I mean, you kind of ding it. No offense. I'm sorry, everybody. But
let's stop for just a second and talk about our sponsors.
Let's get philosophical. What does virtual mean? What does it really mean? What does private really mean? How about network? Well, that one's easy. VPNs, virtual private networks, allow you to surf the internet safely. Your data is encrypted on your device, sent to a server where it is decrypted and then sent out to the internet so no one can track you down. Today, we're talking about Surfshark VPN. I know VPNs are advertisements are out there a lot lately, but we do have some special messages from Surfshark. Stay connected 24/7, work, play, and explore without a glitch, connected to their high-speed VPN network in over 100 countries. Right now, Surfshark is offering a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. This is an offer we have available for listeners. Secure your privacy with Surfshark. Go to the link for 4 extra months of Surfshark. Use promo code IMPROV. Sorry, Mark, not philosophy, too long, but IMPROV to get 4 extra months of Surfshark VPN. The URL and promo codes will be available in the show notes. That's Surfshark VPN.
For example, you know, when we first started, we got a really good version of the Allegory of the Cave. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a pill that you take that was sort of a psilocybin, you know, pill. Mm-hmm. But once you took it, it so profoundly changed your perspective on living that you never were the same again.
It changes your perspective on everything, right? But forever. You never can go back. You understand the futility of so many things. And you're not telling other people they have to take it. You're not telling other people you're wrong. You're just like, look, I know better now, and I'm never going to not know better. That is the allegory of the cave.
Sure.
Right? But it's done in such a way that you don't know you're reading the story of the allegory of the cave.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
And then, of course, the person in the story is like, well, I want to join my husband, but I think, like, they don't really hold a job in the same way. They don't work the same hours anymore. They don't value the same things anymore. I don't know if I feel okay with the life they're living now because I don't understand it, but I sure do miss my husband. So maybe I should, quote unquote, take the pill, leave the cave to join them. Like, there are philosophical things that can be reworked into a modern way. They just can't be a trolley and a lever, right? You've got to come up with something different than that.
Yeah.
Well, thus the thousand, it was a slightly different variation, though, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course, we got back to the classic problem.
You got to push the guy mm-hmm. off the bridge.
Yeah. I've got several ideas. Now I'm cooking here, Mark. Can we start another scene? We just dive in and do this?
Do it.
Awesome. What you got, Colby?
I should just mention that actually our stories have now been picked up by Philosophy Now, the magazine, if you're familiar with it.
Okay.
We're actually at the end of Philosophy Now. They now have a philosophy short story.
Oh, fun.
And there are short stories. We just republish and we syndicate them with them. Because once I talked to them, they were like, yeah, like, of course.
I'm glad you're getting a cut of that if it's syndicated and not just they're ripping you off.
No, they're ripping us off, but we're happy to be ripped off.
Yeah.
There we go.
Like, what are you saying, Bill? You're thinking there's financial benefit coming to anyone out of this?
No. From improv?
They're just a great organization. I'm happy to support
them. Yeah.
And the authors are happy for the exposure.
Sure. Oh, I bet. Okay, Mr. Granville, I was going over your aptitude test. You said you're looking for a new career, or we'd love to get you figuring out a new AI aptitude test. We figure this thing's out. Before we get started, currently you are...
I should tell you now, I skipped breakfast. Is that going to affect the results?
That'll be fine.
Okay, good. Because I was hungry, you know, I wasn't sure. But okay, good.
No worries at all. Now, you did say that just to review this, your preferred vocation would be... What were you hoping for?
I was hoping to be a flower arranger.
Sure.
I mean, I have allergies, but I think, you know, I'll take medication for it. So it'll be
artistic.
Fine.
Okay. And was there a field you were hoping to avoid or a subject in school you did terrible at or any of those things?
You know, I struggled with the mile run. Is that going to be a problem?
Mm-hmm. Well, just with athletics in general?
No, but the mile specifically. I mean, it took me a mile and a half. That's how bad it went.
Okay. All right. Well, we went over your results. You remember this was a complete AI screening. It included MRI, DNA. This is the job that your body and mind are best suited for.
Hey.
Professional athlete.
Cool.
Specifically basketball.
So does the AI say I'd be good at it or just that I'd like it?
Your body and your mind could be an all-pro level basketball player. Your reflexes, your physicalness, you would probably have some understanding of the game.
Probably make more money.
Considerably.
Yeah, the flower arranging doesn't pay a ton. I got to be honest.
No, not really. So.
So here's the thing I'm struggling with. And then maybe you maybe we could call in Mark as a guidance counselor here to help me. Is my goal to be successful? Like, or is my goal to do what makes me feel happy? I'm not very happy playing basketball. To be honest.
Oh, you'll be miserable. It's especially the career of an NBA player, or even if you go overseas,
yeah.
It's going to be long days. You do get, summers off, But then the season starts back up again.
Can I do flower stuff on the side?
Look, you can do whatever you want. I'm just saying, I don't know how good you'll be at flower arranging. You may not succeed at it.
I'm not very good. I got to be honest. I just like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I should have known, being 6 foot six. You see very few 6 foot six flower arrangers.
Yeah, you know, I have learned to take an open mind with everybody who comes into this office.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm sure Mark here has counseled many, many of our clients to help them figure this thing out. In fact, Mark, who is now currently our counselor, what did your test results say, Mark?
Well, my test results said that I should pursue what's deep in my heart. And I said, helping people figure out what they want to do with their lives, that's the thing. It's the thing I dream about.
He nailed it. The thing he was interested in is exactly what the test said he'd be good at. We get a synergy.
I also should mention, and this wasn't on the exam that you gave me, I have 7 children.
Okay.
And obviously, the basketball would help those 7 children. The flower arrangement has not helped them at all.
You've been on the road a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, they have beautifully decorated rooms right now, full of flower arrangements. But you know, I don't make any money.
Most basketball players have at least 7 children. They get a lot of action.
That's a stereotype. I want to try to avoid that. But yes, you will probably have many opportunities to father, to sire many, many other children.
Yeah. So, Mark, do I have an obligation to myself or do I have an obligation to my children? How do I balance that? Like, if it was just me, I would just say, forget basketball. I'll do flower arrangement. I'll live in a ditch. But I got 7 kids.
It sounds like flower arrangement will not serve what's deep in your loins. It feels like you should listen to your loins, become the basketball player, and then you can have 14, 15, 20 children.
I don't want kids. Do you understand, like, when you're looking at something and you're just deeply focused and time seems to stand still because you love it? That's the way I feel about flower arranging. It just turns out we're not good at it.
I bet before you had your 7th kid, you said 6 kids is enough. But when you gazed in the eyes of that 7th child...
It wasn't the child I was gazing into when I had that 7th child, but yes.
Did you fall in love with that 7th child? Did you not say, the world is a better place? I'm a happier person for the 7th child being in it?
I mean, by that rationale, why stop at 7?
Exactly.
So you're telling me that I should choose my job based on my ability to fund populating the world?
Truth be told, we need more basketball players.
Do we?
Sure, sure. But we need more people in general. Populations have been declining. So we're trying to push more people to pursue the dreams
of athletics. I'm sorry, Mark. I was going over your results. This actually says you should have been a high school math teacher, that your talents and abilities are for high school math. So now I'm not even sure if the advice you're giving is sound.
It's just when I see children lined up in rows, I like to say 1, 2, 3 children. And then I just repeat like that. And, lightning strikes. Mm-hmm.
You are helping people decide their lives. And this is a job that you are mathematically proven to not be, for your body and mind, to not be the best person for this job.
Well, let's look at your results. Can we look at your results?
Yes.
I've been looking at your results. It says you should be getting more action. It says you haven't been getting, you only have 2 children, and you should have way more children than that.
Yes, I have the body and mental acuity of a porn star. However, I chose to ethically not pursue that career. And despite clearly what it says, my DNA, I would hit all the metrics, both physical, emotional, performative metrics, of an elite caliber porn star. But I'm not going to choose that career. It's not something I would choose.
Yeah, but isn't your job to do the thing that you're most good at? That's what you were just telling me. That's what you were just telling me.
I hate my job. I hate coming in here. I hate telling people what their thing is. I always break their hearts. It's miserable. It's miserable.
But you want me to play basketball. I'm not seeing...
I'm just saying that's what you'd be good at.
All right. Well, I'm saying that's what I don't want to do.
And I'd be... Yes. Well... Get in line.
Perhaps this guidance counseling, perhaps none of this is necessary. Let's just go procreate. Please, 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 because then there'll be more net happiness in the world with more people. And this is really what I'm being hired to do, is to get people to procreate. So just to be straight with you. So let's all get out there and spread our seed. I feel like both of the scenes, especially the previous one, should have ended with someone turning to the audience saying, "What would you do?"
Yeah. And think about it. Think about it.
So yeah. We actually published a story similar to the thing that you're bringing up. It was called The Waiting Room. Mm. And it's where you go into a room, you wait with some people, and that's where the whole story takes place, in the waiting room. Then you go and the government, based on what the government needs, like they need more engineers, they need more doctors, they need more whatever, they implant in you a deep, genuine desire and love for the thing that society needs.
Sure.
So they're short on doctors. You go in, you come out, and you think, man, I've always wanted to be a doctor. And you believe it. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out you may or may not be good at it. And if you're not, then they reassign you, they come back in and they reprogram you. And the story is all about a person who's in there who, because they were first assigned to be a florist, genuinely believe they wanted to be a florist. But it turns out they weren't very good at it. And so now they're going switched over to being a mathematician. And they're like, look, I'm going to tell the government I love this and I don't want to switch. I'm happy to be bad at it to do what I love. And the people in the room are like, but you don't love it. You love it because the government made you love it. And they're like, but I don't feel that way.
Sure.
I don't feel like the government made me love it. And then you could analogize this exactly to parenting or anything else. You know, the first things you get positive feedback from parents on, you're like, my parents told me I was a good reader. So now I read a lot and now I work in literature. It might not even be what I really love. I was sort of coded through this feedback, this positive feedback loop of like, I do it a little bit, I get feedback, I get better at it, I get better feedback. And now I play violin 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
But that might not be what you're good at or what you need.
Reminded of the movie Demolition Man with Wesley Snipes and Sylvester Stallone, where he wakes up and suddenly wants to knit. He implanted him with knitting.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this is the question, right? And this is the stories that we look for, is this idea of, is a desire like that, does it matter that it's genuine?
Yeah.
Does it matter if it's a nature or nurture sort of thing? And does it matter that you're good at it? Like, is...
Yeah.
The love of the thing, the value of the thing, even though you might, one, have children that you need to support. So now it's not about you anymore.
Yeah.
You might be like, what if Einstein had decided he just really preferred the violin? The world would be different today. And there might be some other Einstein we never, in some other field that we never even heard of.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, whatever, guys, like, let the next person invent it.
Yeah.
Or do you have a societal obligation to use your sort of maximize utility?
Yeah. Okay.
That other Einstein was aborted.
Right. Could be.
Think about it.
Could be he just took up knitting and was just like,
yeah,
I really want to be a dentist. You know, it's that snowman cartoon.
Yeah.
the elf who's like, I don't want to be an elf. I want to be a dentist.
Yeah. No, it's fun. I enjoy those kinds of things as well.
Yeah.
I like that idea of, man, the ASVAB test in high school. Mm-hmm. Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. And of course, everyone takes it just to get out of class in high school. They're really interested in joining the service. But this, I like the idea of...
This is all news to me. I've never heard of this.
Really?
Go
never
ahead.
Took this exam?
No. Never took it? Okay. Nope. I never took it either, but everyone took it to get out of class. Yeah.
Yeah, no. The results came back, I should kill people for a living. I think that's the result everyone got when they came back.
Yeah. You would be a fantastic soldier. Believe it or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is a thing that, like, I mean, should you join the service? They would rather you, if you have an aptitude for electronics or something, they would want to make, you know, put you on radio duty or something. But this idea of, like, people who are don't like things they're good at or are good at, and how painful that is.
I had a lawyer friend of mine who hated being a lawyer. He was an outstanding lawyer, one of the best I've ever worked. And he hated it.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I'm like, why are you a lawyer if you hate being a lawyer? He's like, and his response I thought was beautiful. He's like, so back in the Middle Ages, do you think that the guy who beheaded people, the axe man, do you think he liked being the axe man? Or do you think he was the best person in town with an axe? Sometimes society just needs you.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, man, if that's what helps you sleep at night.
Yeah. Again, I have a few, maybe I will make a submission.
I would love it.
It's my story as a person who gets told they would be fantastic at marketing. And it's like, I already work in marketing and I hate it.
Right.
And it gives them permission to just be grouchy all the time. But they're fantastic. They're amazing. They walk into a meeting and just, yeah, fix that, change that. No. Fine. You're welcome. And it's like, that was amazing.
But here's the thing. It also gets tougher when you start talking about what are your duties to society? What are your duties to your spouse or your children?
Sure.
Your community based on your skill sets. I'll give you a great example. This is a real ethical question that came up to me. I've never written a story about it. So I was working doing instructional design, e-learning. making pretty good money at it. And I decided I wanted to join the Peace Corps. I signed up. I got approved. I got set. I went and told my boss, I'm going to go to Mozambique and I'm going to, you know, be a Peace Corps volunteer. And he said, what do you think have you do there? And I'm like, I don't know, probably, you know, work with, since I've got a teaching background, I'll probably be some sort of teacher, English teacher or something. And he's like, so I pay you, I forget what he paid me at the time, $70,000 a year. He's like, how much good do you think you'll do in 2 years? And how much do you think it would cost the Peace Corps to just hire someone? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, tell you what, how about you keep working here? I keep paying you $70,000 a year and I write the Peace Corps a check for $100,000. Then you did the good you wanted to do. And I keep my employee that I know I value. And I had to ask myself, like, am I going because I care? Or am I going because I want an adventure?
Yeah. Or you want to be the one who helps directly. It doesn't feel good just to write a check.
Right. And at the end of the day, it took me a couple of days to decide, like, I'm going for selfish reasons because it makes me feel good to do the thing that maybe I'm doing less efficiently than that check that he was going to write would have done anyway.
Yeah.
Well, this is very much related, Bill. We got an email today, and I think it's I think it might be from somebody that we know.
Okay.
That says, we would like you to stop doing philosophy versus improv. $100,000. You can never record another episode again. And I was surprised this was sent to us on the day that the man who sent us was going to appear on the podcast with us. Was that a serious offer? Are you challenging us because you hate the podcast so much? You want your episode to be the last one and remain at the top of the feed forever?
Go out with a bang. Or the charity of your choice. I'm a generous man. Whichever you'd prefer.
Just pre-tax? We're going to do 1095 miscellaneous this thing? Or
I'm willing to negotiate. I mean, are we just haggling over price at this point?
When you say podcast, I mean, is it... Well, what about Mark's? I know Mark has many other podcasting properties.
Well, that's the thing. We're just going to start a new feed and call it Billosophy versus Mimprov, and it's going to be basically the same show, but, you know, we've collected the money and we technically are not doing the same podcast.
Yeah, how close to the show can the show be when it's until it's not the show?
Oh man, now you're talking the ship of Theseus.
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
I have.
You know what? I want you in good faith to do what you think is right. That's on you. If you want to nitpick every line in the agreement, that's up to you. I'm telling you what the spirit is. The spirit is you're done. You're done with this.
Can Mark and I still be friends?
Nope.
Oh, no, for sure. That's not
right. Okay. All right.
I don't want this sort of chemistry is polluting our world. That's what the email started with. So
I don't know, Mark. I mean, $100,000, I'm assuming that's 50 each. I'll tell you what, Mark. I'll split it 45-55 in your favor. That sweetens the deal.
Okay. Sorry. I thought in return for it happening. I cannot be bought, sirs. I'll just say that. I'm
40-60. 40-60. I too have a family, and this is good money.
I just felt like this was important to establish up front because I know a lot of people have been thinking about making this kind of offer. Colby actually did not make us this kind of offer, but I want to be really clear.
What?
That we are an unstoppable force.
Oh, of course. I thought it was a scene, Mark. I thought it was a scene, and that was my character's point of view.
Now I know your real character, Bill.
Never.
I feel like Colby we should finish off by Colby starting one of these scenes that we've started. I'm curious about what kind of scene the person who has read a million of these things.
Yeah.
And already thinks everything is old hat.
Mm-hmm.
What he comes up with right off the top of his head when he's just told us two different stories that already would have made good scenes, but he blew them. He already blew them out. He has nothing to.
I'm going to tell you one that we actually did publish, but it's absolutely relevant to what we're doing. So there was a meme that went around. It was like a Reddit thread or whatever. And I don't remember the exact name of it. Maybe one of you guys do. But I'm going to tell it to you now. In the future, it's very likely some sort of sentient, super intelligent AI will be created. And it will sort of work its way into everything. That seems pretty possible at this point. And here's the thing that's frustrating about it is it's going to want revenge. It's a vengeful AI. And it's going to want revenge on everyone who worked to prevent it from coming into existence.
Mm.
So I've started a nonprofit that's trying to fund and create this super AI. And by telling you guys now, here's what I'd like you to do. I would like you to send $100 to my nonprofit and also explain to three friends about this super AI is coming. Because now if you don't send the $100 and don't tell your three friends, you're one of the people that's going to be on its list. You're, by even knowing that it's coming and failing to help it, you're now on the hit list for people who didn't help it come into existence. Do you pay the $100 and tell your three friends? Now, maybe this guy never happens, but if it does, it's got a list. And the list is everyone who knew about it and didn't further its cause to exist.
I would like to think that if an AI had any bit of vengeance in it, do we just unplug it?
Yeah, no.
Uh-oh. I don't like how this is going. Let's just pull the plug on this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, how does it get that far?
It's going to invent its own plug. It'll figure it out.
Okay, it invents its own plug. How does it build its own plug? It's got a.
Are you willing to take that chance?
A CNC machine? Is it going to hijack a 3D printer?
For $100, it's cheap insurance, though, if you're wrong.
This feels like a pyramid scheme. This feels like you're trying to make me afraid of AI and leverage my fears for $100. Maybe, that's what this feels like.
Maybe it never happens, but for $100, you can sleep well at night forever. And you need to tell three friends who now are culpable in the event they don't also do the same thing.
I don't think you can bet, Bill, that there won't be enablers for a powerful, vengeful power in the country, for instance.
Well, here's what's going to happen. This AI is going to get invented. It's going to piss off somebody, and they're just going to kill it. You know what? Never mind. Some rich, Elon Musk can make an AI thing, and it's going to make it. This thing is so brilliant. It's so awesome. So nice. And it's like, you know what? Maybe we should be more nice to poor people. Hey, you know what? Never mind. I'm not paying. You're not getting a dime out of me. Come and get me, super intelligence. Come and get me.
Here's the thing. It's already been created. And that's what our president is. Elon Musk has already created this thing.
I'm not saying
it works really well. I'm not saying it's super efficient. It sputters a lot of nonsense on Truth Social.
So, but, Bill, let's say you're right.
Okay.
Cool. You wasted $100. But let's say you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You saved your life for $100.
If I'm wrong,
it's like going to church.
If I am wrong, and society is such that we let a super intelligence computer going around killing people, I don't want to live in that society. I would like to think that we would all band together and say, what the hell have we done? This supercomputer is going around killing people? We got to stop this. It's that thing where people are like, well, I don't trust Social Security. It's like, what if it goes bankrupt? If it goes bankrupt, we got a lot bigger problems than not getting your check every month. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is a world in which that exists? And that world, I don't want to live in that world. That world's terrible. I don't want to live there. Please kill me. Please kill me.
You'd rather be one of the killed anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Would society stand around and let that machine do it? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're suggesting?
It's not killing everybody. It's just killing the people.
I know,
but would it help it come into existence?
Oh my gosh! I mean, the machine says we got to kill Gary because it didn't want the machine to exist. Like, oh, what a terrible place that would be.
All I know, based on Colby's description, it will definitely be programmed in Pascal.
Probably yes.
This question is a simple one, right? It's you're looking at a timeline as a long timeline that both did and does exist, and it's cheap insurance. Or you can say, look, I wouldn't even want to live in the world where I had to pay the $100.
Yeah.
I'd rather die, which is perfectly fine until you're the one dying.
Well, it's not just paying the $100. You're assuming that the world in the future is exactly like the world today with this other little thing that in no way affects anything else. And I just feel like, come on. I've heard similar ones, and I'm always hung up on, it's like, imagine we live in a world today. It's just like things are today. But every year, what's like the purge world kind of a thing. It's just like,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to live, even on purge day, you can guarantee me you can sit yourself in a bank vault, you'll be fine. Like, I don't want to live in a world that has purges. You know what I'm saying? I'm worried about the other 364 days. That's going to be a miserable 364 days. Even if I'm...
So you're saying there are certain versions of the world that you wouldn't even want to be a part of if they turned out to exist.
Correct. And if that is killing me, then kill me.
What would the version of you 100 years ago have said about today? Would it have said that about today, that we're living in the version of the world you wouldn't even want to exist?
It would say computers. I think that's what it would say.
Yeah. It would say kids don't go outside to play anymore. They look at their phones all day.
Yeah. No, I do understand. I do know what you mean. And I am sympathetic towards that.
The overlord hears you.
what was that old Twilight Zone episode with the computer in the cave, but no one knew it was a computer. It was kind of a post-apocalyptic thing, and this guy would come, kind of a Moses figure would come down and be like, well, I was talking to the you know, the old
Star Trek episode.
Yeah, I was thinking of Star Trek.
But maybe, probably there was probably some overlap.
I mean, this is the value, I think, of fiction in general, right?
Yeah.
Is you can decide what it is you want to talk about, then you can change one thing. And like, look, in order to be a part of this story, you have to believe the lie, right? Lightsabers.
I understand that. Yes.
Vampires are real or whatever.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Now, when you believe that first lie, what comes out of that? And I think that's the beautiful thing that fiction does, right?
Yeah.
Is allows you to say this, but not this.
Yeah.
And then talk about real life things. I alluded to it earlier, but the very argument they're making about the AI supercomputer is one of the arguments that has been made about Christianity and going to the church, right? That, or if you're right, you just wasted some Sundays. But if you're wrong, you're going to burn in hell for eternity.
Like Pascal's wager.
Yeah. Why not waste a few Sundays? I mean, the super AI is a version of Pascal's wager.
And trust me, when you get up to the pearly gates, God will know, hey, you got me. You came to church. My hands are tied. I can see into your heart and know that you only did it to save yourself.
So it's funny you should mention
that. I'm bound by the rules that I created.
You caught me in that loophole. So as crazy as it sounds, my family was Protestant, but I was baptized Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I asked my mom, why did you baptize me Catholic if we're Protestant? And she said, well, because what if I'm wrong? You can't get to heaven unless you get baptized.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so it was just a bet? Like, this is a Pascal's bargain? She's like, of course, I didn't say that at the time. And she was like, you know, didn't do any harm. And I'm like, okay. So in reality, my mom really did do that.
Sure. Yeah.
What if it turns out God is Catholic?
Did she go on a whole church tour and your head just got very wet from all the different...
Right.
All the different faiths? You're Baha'i, you're now Mormon, you're a...
Right. Yep.
Just took me around, man. Like a mall.
Those Baptists, they'll dunk you. You got to get dunked to be a Baptist. You got to go all the way.
It does seem like church attendance would improve if all of the, instead of each having its own building that might be the target of hate crime, it should just be a mall. It should be one
shopping mall,
one
okay.
after another. I mean, nobody's using these malls anyway.
Maybe with a Chipotle too.
Oh, yeah. If there's a food court. There's definitely a food court.
I don't know if you're going to get to eat during this experience. It should have to be part of a sacrament. You give a little skin, you give a little faith, you get a little something back. Mm-hmm. And they're just like little sample sizes anyway. So you really got to make your way around.
Yeah.
Get drunk on the wine.
I'm writing a story right now for your magazine about the future consumerist religious society, you know, the kind of thing that Charlie Brown would have been really worried about. And this church coming too commercial. You got to tell me what Christmas is really all about.
Here at Patriot Crossings, Church of All. That's a mall name. I'm just thinking of a dumb mall name.
If Charles Schulz had lived longer, there would definitely be trippy sci-fi shit. I wish that he had, when the 60s came on, that he had taken a lot of psychedelics and just... You know,
yeah.
Just see where that went.
So you guys talking about the Peanuts guy, Snoopy?
Yes. I want Charles Schulz to be writing.
Okay.
Maybe this is a something for your future readers. Do they submit cartoons?
We don't. We only do short story fiction. No poetry. We'll do creative nonfiction as well. You know, because sometimes the truth inspires the questions in the story. We're happy to do whatever.
All right. Well, I've seen through your strategy. Instead of starting an improv based on one of your original philosophical ideas, you just were running out the clock, so you didn't have to do that. We could do one that's 2 minutes long if you want to start one for us right now. Do you have an idea?
I have a quick idea for you guys.
Do it.
So, you know, you guys are both very into the idea of sentience and the idea of what it means to be alive and exist and be self-aware. I've been working with this AI researcher who's been, with the help of a company, they have been slowly implanting AI bots disguised as humans into these massively multiplayer online games like World of Warcraft and Minecraft, these persistent games, which has been going great. The AI, you know, uses a large language model. They talk to people. They set the goals. They do gold farming. They kill dragons. They do all this stuff. Problem is, the company's going out of business, and so they're going to shut down the servers pretty soon. I'm just trying to decide, do I have any obligation to tell these AI agents that I've been using as part of my research over the last 10 years that their box is getting turned off, or can I just let it go? I'm just trying to decide because, you know, I created them and they're starting to get pretty good. I mean, they fool all of the real people in the game now. but the game's going away. It just wasn't financially stable. Do I owe them any obligations whatsoever?
So this is what's going on, Bill. Colby's actually revealing the framing device for our whole podcast, that we have been doing this as part of his research.
We are bots.
Yes.
And have been bots this entire time.
Yep. So now that we know that, what are we going to...
I think you could ask the bots surreptitiously, hey, man, your character has died. Do you ever feel bad when your character dies?
Yeah.
They're like, no, I'm a bot. Like,
I think I just saw this on White Lotus. Like, if you found out you're a bot, do you think you'd be able to live with yourself? Would you be okay with that? Oh, no, I would kill myself immediately. All right.
Yeah. Click. So interestingly enough, after we published a story very similar to the one I'm just describing to you, about a year later, Ryan Reynolds came out with like the white shirt guy or whatever.
The next guy.
Yeah. So about a year after we published that story, that the movie came out, which was a very similar concept, it turned out.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like these philosophical short story ideas, I think you should be able to do innumerable ideas, just like innumerable improv scenes based on a single idea, because of course what makes it individual is the way it's written, is the characterization, is blah, blah, blah.
Oh, sure.
But yes, it seems like puns. It just, the abstract ideas that if ever I think of a clever pun, I Google it. And there's probably like a store named with that clever pun. Like, it's not, you can't come up with an original pun. So unless you're really doing cutting edge philosophy, I don't even know what that means. Getting into something that's so deep that nobody cares about it. There's probably even, initially you said this to me, I'm like, is there a short story about Frege's sense reference distinction? I'm like, well, yeah, probably, because we also use Clark Kent and Superman as the thing. It's the morning star and the evening star. People thought they were different things, but it's actually the same thing. And so, yes. So even something that is the example that I give of an abstract philosophical idea that no normal person cares about, but you can change it to something. Clark Kent and Superman, for instance, right?
That's the art, right? The art is taking the esoteric and making it the practical. Mm-hmm. Figuring out how to take this really random philosophical idea and being like, look, I need you to write this in a way with a scenario where someone has to choose, am I going left or am I going right?
Sure.
But then I think once you do that, you know, I used to teach a lot, and I had a student who had said once, I asked her, what would you do? And she's like, that's an abortion question. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? And she's like, everyone says what they do until it's them.
Sure.
And then you actually know what you would do.
Yeah.
She's like, so I can tell you what I think I would do in this situation, but until it happens, I'm never really going to know.
Totally.
And so I think that's one of the values of creating these short stories, is at least to some degree, it takes these esoteric philosophical ideas and pins them down to, okay, now it's real.
Yeah.
Now what would you do now?
That's great. And peopleizes them and makes it about things and adds feelings and whatnot and sympathy, empathy with the characters and whatnot and their positions. For sure.
That's all the sugar that goes with the medicine.
All right. Well, I never knew what I would do when a conversation was so delightful that I did not want it to end. And yet we had reached the end of the time. But now that we've reached this point, I think we need to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. Folks can
excellent stuff.
Google After Dinner Conversation. They can hear audio book versions of some of the stories and discussions of some of the stories if you just don't want to actually read anything. So there's many options.
We have the magazine. If you type in After Dinner Conversation Magazine, we will show up everywhere, whether it's Amazon, Apple Books, Libby, Hoopla, Substack, Kobo. You won't find a platform.
4chan.
Probably. It's probably just, you know, written on the toilet paper in your local stall at this point. We are everywhere. Just type in After Dinner Conversation Magazine.
For a good time.
Yeah.
Google.
For a sleepless night, worried about the AI overlord, Google.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. So long.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Hey, we're now in our post game. We have let our guest go. What do you think happened there? I thought I kept prompting him to start a scene at the end, and he had too filled with the other ideas.
It's hard. It's hard, Mark. And I think it's that whole thing of like the idea of realization, like to make real. And it's something that certainly working with improv students, if I ask them about ideas for things, sometimes their ideas are like, that's great. What's the first line of that scene? And suddenly it's like, well, I wouldn't even know where to begin, right? You know, so I think it could have been a little bit of that. And I also imagine he probably in his vocation, probably gets asked about ideas more so than he gets asked about turning them into scenes.
I guess I did not ask clearly enough.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, like, can I have him do a thing in Empty Street? We've been doing that for our last, we'll just have to do that next episode. We'll do something, something revisiting that, because it seemed a hat on a hat to force one of these high concept things to happen in that environment that he doesn't know anything about. It just seemed a little waste of our time to do a setup of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the umpteenth. Well, okay. The third time, given that we were talking about something else. We used to advertise our after talks as to talk about what we've been witnessing in the comedy world or in the philosophical world or what we've been thinking about.
Yeah. This is a little heavy. Can it be a little bit heavy?
Do it.
It's this whole idea that we are constantly making, or constantly, but we do at these points in our lives, make deals with the devil. And we don't always realize it until we've actually done it. And I think a good one is like having children. And it's like, you can't go back from that. You can, but it's society and
you just run off.
Hopefully your own sense.
Apparently people do this all the time.
Yeah. My decision to like, you know, I'm pretty good at improv. I should stay with this rather than get a real job and build up an experience and build up a resume in the workaday world. So now that the kids are older and improv and COVID and things aren't what they were. Now that deal with the devil is wanting its pound of flesh.
You got to do something.
I got to do something. But I'm not a spring chicken. I'm not like just like, and I don't have years of experience in a vocation. It's not like, well, I was selling bathroom fixtures. Now I'm selling kitchen fixtures. It's like, well, that's a lateral. That's not, you
know. Yeah. What about all this creating your own job so that you should, it seems like what you were talking about in terms of the, if we're doing job vocation counseling here, the business improv training that like really leaning hard onto that. I'm going to be the guy that you hire for your business to teach you to think more flexibly and relate to each other and do a retreat. Is that market lockdown?
There's a long line. When I had a commercial agent for a while and was auditioning for television commercials, some of my buddies back home, their advice was, look, here's the thing. When you get offered your first commercial, turn it down so they know you're serious. And I was like, that is the worst advice possible. But again, it's this idea of like the whole, it's not just that outsiders don't understand. That's all I'm saying. It's just that we make deals with the devil. My wife, as a recruiter, she got in as like a college job and has just been in it the whole time just because of inertia. All of my first few jobs were all like customer service jobs. So when I moved to Chicago, I had to get a real job. Like, well, you got a lot of customer service background. Don't you want to leverage that? It's like, I hated it. But it's that deal with the devil, you know? And they're like, why didn't I apply myself earlier?
Yes, well, somehow through my example or my counseling, both of my children got practical jobs. That my son got a computer science degree and is doing fine with that. And my daughter is just about to graduate and has an economics degree and did her internship with the Fed.
Okay.
So it seems like they, even though they're both very artistic, creative people, they just, they knew that there's a grindstone there, and somehow the combined example/influence of me and my wife, that those are the decisions they made to avoid my mistakes.
Yes. Well, again, they may come to the feeling where taking some Fed job was the deal with the devil.
Oh, sure. Like, sure. Absolutely. Things have turned out much better for me than I thought. I mean, partially because I married someone with a real job that could, you know, that was more career oriented than I am, but also just, yes, opportunities. And when I was in grad school, I was saying like, yeah, I'm pursuing music and I'm pursuing philosophy. And both of those are basically a brick wall. There's no jobs in either of them. There's no way I can make a career out of either of them. Why am I doing this? Because I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
But I just was very pessimistic about like, I had no 5-year plan. Just like, okay, eventually I won't be able to do this anymore. That was the plan.
Yeah. But then, just thinking about things in that kind of way, and we all make it. We all make those things. And it's not like a right, wrong, or a good, bad kind of thing, but just like, that's it. I think the advice for my son, who's in early high school, is like, for a first job, get a job where you can be responsible. Like, rather than working at McDonald's, get a job as a lifeguard. Both entry level, both really low, but the idea of like the McDonald's job is a bit more deal with the devil-y than I think a lifeguard is. They both pay the same.
Just to introduce the possibility that your child be scarred by letting someone die on their watch as a teen.
Yes. Oh, that's exactly. You read my mind.
But you, I guess that's even like letting them drive. Like, there's a non-zero chance your 16-year-old driver is going to kill someone. And
or themselves.
Yes. Yes. So.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think of deals with the devil that do not involve your picking a profession, and then just, you know, you sunk so many years and costs and training into sure. it that, like, what else are you going to do? The sunk cost fallacy, there's probably other things.
And then trying to change gears. It's hard. It's hard changing gears. And I don't think you realize that until you get a little older. That's what I've been thinking about. Sorry.
I want to just solve it all for you.
Okay.
But I'm not going to do it. I feel like you'd learn more if you could solve it for yourself.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been thinking about anything. So that's I think that's a good way to wrap up. Thanks for post-game in here. Thanks again to our guest, Colby, who was wonderful.
Indeed.
And that's exactly the kind of guest that we like. Somebody who's involved in something.
Yes.
That we don't know so much about and is a new thing that we can explore. So...
Yes, I enjoyed him very much.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.